Sermons from Broome Anglican Church in the Diocese of Northwest Australia. Steve McAlpine recently published an article on his website that is a great introduction to how things are going for Christians in the West. The article's called When Cultural Tailwinds Become Cultural Headwinds. For a long time, we have enjoyed tailwinds. That is, our culture has been basically friendly to Christians and Christianity. But in my lifetime, that has started to change. We have started to face headwinds. And in that situation, a big temptation is to get defensive. A big temptation is to go into siege mode. A big temptation, as we feel hostility toward Christians rising, is to become a bit hostile ourselves. And that might even be a good strategy if we were fighting for a home in this world. But as 1 Peter teaches us, this world is not our home. We are sojourners and exiles on our way to a better home. And that sets us free to respond to hostility in ways that might surprise our opponents or adversaries. And our passage today, 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 11 to 15, gives us three specific ways to surprise them. First, surprise them with goodness. We're looking here at our first two verses, verses 11 and 12. Verse 11 begins, "Beloved." Let's just stop there. It's easy to skip past that word, beloved. But that word might help us more than any other word in this passage to face hostility or headwinds. The world calls Christians many things. Sometimes it calls us annoying. More and more, it's calling us harmful or hateful. When we hear that, we need to remember what God calls us. Beloved. In an interview, former Prime Minister Paul Keating said that his mother's great love sustained him through all the opposition he faced. But with respect to Mrs. Keating, we have a much greater love. Thousands of years after the voices calling us harmful or hateful have fallen silent, we will still be hearing God's voice calling us the same thing He will call us forever. Beloved. We better pick up the pace or this is going to be a long sermon. Verse 11. Beloved, I urge you as sojourners and exiles to abstain from the passions of the flesh which wage war against your soul. To be a Christian is to be at war. There are always things trying to pull our hearts away from God. Peter calls them passions of the flesh. These are ungodly habits, impulses and desires. And resisting those things is not an easy thing. It's a war. Just think about that word. A war is a long, hard fight. Thankfully, unlike many wars, the outcome of this war is not in any doubt. If we fight, we will win. Because God is with us. And God is for us. And one reason to fight is actually for the sake of our opponents or adversaries. We see this as Peter continues in verse 12. Keep your conduct among the Gentiles honourable, so that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day of visitation. As an aside, that word Gentiles can and often does mean non-Jews, but it can also just mean nations or peoples. So I don't think this verse means Jews keep your conduct among non-Jews honourable. It means Christians keep your conduct among non-Christians honourable. And it's sad when Christians don't do that, isn't it? It's certainly sad when a Christian leader becomes a scandal. We just know what some people will say. Yep, that's what I thought about those Christians. But these verses aren't just talking to leaders, they're talking to all Christians. Peter is calling each one of us to take our war with sin so seriously that people will find it very hard to say anything bad about us. Better still, that people will glorify God because of us. This is the best case scenario. People being so surprised by our goodness, especially if they've treated us badly, that they start being drawn to Jesus. We might be nervous at the thought of our behaviour having something to do with other people coming to Jesus. But do we think that God has set up something impossible here? Do we think that God has set up something unreasonable? In a podcast, I heard about a Christian woman working in the office. And she found other women in the workplace coming to her for advice. And that led to some opportunities to talk to them about Jesus. And at one point she asked one of these people, "What made you start talking to me in the first place?" And the reply was, "You're the only one in this place who doesn't join in the gossip." That sort of thing happens. People notice that Christians are different. And some of them want to know why. And it might even be that one benefit of our changing culture, one benefit of the tailwinds turning to headwinds, is that the difference between Christians and everyone else starts to become more obvious. So first, surprise them with goodness. Second, surprise them with honour. This is in verses 13 to 17, and as we see, verse 13 begins, "Be subject, for the Lord's sake, to every human institution." Now, every human institution doesn't mean that we have to be subject to the Melbourne Softball Association. Every human institution means every legitimate authority. And much more important is that we understand this phrase, be subject. It's a phrase that appears four times in the book of 1 Peter. So it's worth taking care we know what it means. The Greek word translated be subject can also mean submit. So be subject, submit, those are interchangeable. But this word doesn't mean obey. In the New Testament, the ideas of submission and obedience are related, but not identical. Be subject or submit does not mean obey without question. It means letting someone lead you. It means honoring and obeying someone as much as you can without disobeying God. In the Old Testament, Daniel faithfully serves the Persian king Darius. But when Darius makes a law that for 30 days you're not allowed to pray to anyone except him, Daniel respectfully disobeys and continues to pray thrice daily to the Lord. In the New Testament, the rulers and elders in Jerusalem tell Peter and John to stop telling people about Jesus. And Peter basically says to them, this is in Acts chapter 4, who should we obey? You or God? So Peter himself shows us that we can't obey authorities when they want us to disobey God. But apart from that situation, Peter tells us that we should honour those authorities as much as we can. And he gives us, I think, three reasons to do that. One, in verse 14, is that governors are sent by God. As the Apostle Paul says in Romans, any rulers that exist have been appointed by God. Now that might be hard for us to accept, especially when we think about all the bad rulers there have been. When Peter wrote these words, honour the emperor at the time may well have been the Christian killing Nero. But the Bible teaches us that God appoints good and bad rulers for ultimately good purposes. For example, it says he raised up King Nebuchadnezzar to judge Judah for its idolatry and injustice. So even bad authorities do some good. And that's a second reason to be subject to them. As it also says in verse 14, authorities in general, by and large, tend to restrain evil and reward good. It is far and away, most of the time, better to live somewhere with a bad government than to live somewhere with no government. We may well have many problems with many authorities, but we should be careful about saying things like, they're all idiots, or they're all crooks, because we're talking about people God has appointed. A third reason to be subject to authorities is in verse 15, and that is to silence the ignorance of foolish people. That's talking about people who foolishly think that Christians are bad for the world. That view has been getting more popular in recent times, hasn't it? That Christians are bad for the world. And that is even leading to changes in laws, reducing some of our freedoms, like the freedom of Christian schools to hire Christian teachers. It's worth trying to defend those freedoms. But a higher priority is trying to show those people that they're wrong. Trying to show at least some of them that actually Christians are good for the world. And part of that, as we see in verse 17, is to honour everyone, including those we disagree with, including those in authority. In verse 16, Peter reminds us we are free. We don't belong to anyone but God. No human authority can claim our ultimate obedience or allegiance. That belongs to God alone. But Peter also says we shouldn't use our freedom to do whatever we want. We should use it to serve. Martin Luther said that Christians should remember two things that are true at the same time. A Christian is a perfectly free Lord of all, subject to none. And a Christian is a perfectly dutiful servant of all, subject to all. To many people, maybe even to us, words like submit, words like serve, leave a bad taste in our mouth. Those words feel like losing. But Christians lose nothing when we submit or when we serve. On the contrary, it is our glory to follow the example of our servant King. More on his example very soon. But the third surprise in verses 18 to 20 is, surprise them with grace. Here, Peter talks to servants or slaves. And for some people, these verses are very unsettling, especially as Peter tells servants to keep showing respect to a master who unfairly beats them. So before we go any further, I'll make a couple of disclaimers. One, this isn't telling us that we should just accept violence. Peter has just told us that God provides authorities to punish evil. So if you experience workplace violence or domestic violence, God is not telling you to put up with that. Servants in the first century could not call the police, but you can and you should. Two, some people take these verses as more evidence that the Bible is pro-slavery, but that is nonsense. In 1 Timothy, there is a list of people in big trouble with God, and that list includes enslavers, people who make slaves. So the Bible is not pro-slavery. It's just that, despite what some people would very much like, ending slavery is not the Bible's top priority. Its top priority is people being reconciled to God through Jesus Christ. While slavery is not good, and when we look forward to the day slavery will end, in 10,000 years, whether or not you were a slave in this world won't matter one bit. In 10,000 years, the only thing that will matter is whether or not you were reconciled to God through Jesus Christ. Now, having made those disclaimers, what are these verses actually about? They're about grace. And what exactly does grace mean? Grace means kindness that a person doesn't deserve. The Christian message is all about God's grace to us. We don't deserve his kindness. We deserve his judgment for our sins. But he provided Jesus to take that judgment for us, to take it from us, so we can be forgiven. And people who know that grace, people who've experienced that grace, will show grace to others. Will show undeserved kindness to others. What will that look like? Well, let's think about this servant who has a master who beats him. He can't get any help, so he's going to be tempted to hate his master. He's going to be tempted to do as little work as he can. He might even be tempted to steal from his master, to balance the scales. And Peter says, don't do that. Show that master grace. Show that master kindness he definitely doesn't deserve. Keep on serving that master faithfully, as if he were a good and gentle master. Well, that's easy for me to say, isn't it? But these verses have been convicting me this week. They've been helping me realize how often I am very nice to people until they are not nice to me. Recently, I had to deal with a public servant who behaved like my inquiry, like my approach was the greatest possible inconvenience. And as I dealt with this person, I felt myself shifting into the cold civility that I tend to use with unfriendly people. I know that's nothing like a slave getting beaten, but I wonder if God's convicting me about this now, because as our culture changes, I might be dealing with a few more people not being nice to me. And when that happens, God doesn't just want me to be civil to those people, because he has not just been civil to me. He has been gracious to me. He has treated me. He keeps on treating me so much better than I deserve. And he wants me to treat other people the same way, in the hope that they might come to know his grace. And if I do that, I'll be following the example of Christ. Look at verse 21. For to this you have been called, because Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example, so that you might follow in his steps. Anybody read the book In His Steps? That's a shame. You might want to fix that. It's a lovely work of Christian fiction about a church of people who commit to living 1 year by the rule, what would Jesus do? That book might even be where that phrase came from. And to some extent, Peter wants us to live by that phrase. In the next couple of verses, he tells us 4 things that Jesus didn't do when he faced unjust suffering, and 1 very important thing he did do. What didn't Jesus do? Well, verses 22 and 23. He didn't sin. He didn't deceive. He didn't revile. And he didn't threaten. I think those roughly match the things Peter has just been talking about. Jesus surprised them with goodness. Jesus surprised them with honor. Jesus surprised them with grace. Jesus not only faced an unjust beating, but an unjust execution. And what did he pray as he hung on the cross with nails piercing his hands and feet? He prayed, Father, forgive them. Do we pray that for people who give us a hard time? So Jesus didn't sin, didn't deceive, didn't revile, didn't threaten. What did he do? Friends, this is so important. At the end of verse 23, he continued entrusting himself to him who judges justly. Some people think God's judgment is bad news. But it's actually good news. It is very good news that there will be a day. The day is coming when people who have been treated unjustly will finally see justice. When everyone will be called to account for the evil they've done in this world. We shouldn't just accept unjust treatment. We should use the remedies available to us. But if those remedies fail, here is the ultimate remedy. We can entrust ourselves to him who judges justly. We can relax, knowing a day is coming when the truth will come out, when evil will be exposed and punished, and when those who've taken refuge in the rightful King of this world will be restored forever. And because we know that day is coming, that's why we can afford to follow the example of Jesus. Following the example of Jesus is stupid advice if this world is all there is. But if there's another world, if there's a better world, then we can afford to follow the example of Jesus. And he died to make it possible for us to do that. See there in verse 24, he died that we might die to sin and live to righteousness. In other words, the whole point of the cross is to make us people like Jesus. To make us people who will surprise others with goodness, surprise them with honor, and surprise them with grace. Although as I finish, please don't hear me saying that if we only do those things, the cultural headwinds will turn back into tailwinds and everyone will be really nice to us. Jesus did these things perfectly and they killed him for it. It's unlikely they'll kill us. In fact, as I was powerfully reminded recently at CMS Summer School, we still have things way, 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 way better than most Christians in history and in the world today. But as the headwinds rise, so will the price of following Jesus. And some people, maybe even some people here today, will decide that they can't afford to keep paying their price, that price. But we can afford to pay it, as so many Christians have before us, as long as we remember that this world is not our home. Because this world is not our home, our goal is not to make ourselves comfortable and secure in this world. Our goal is to bring as many people as we can with us on our journey to a better home. And one of our key strategies is the element of surprise. It's tempting to get defensive. It's tempting to go into siege mode. But instead of doing that, let's keep surprising them with goodness, honour, and grace. We hope that sermon helped you. To connect with us, visit our website, broomanglican.church.